Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Troy Nunes is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casola, and with me today is Dan Lyons.
Hello, everyone. Happy belated Father's Day. Happy NCAA got washed at STOTUS week. happy Boeheim's Army is back with a bunch of new names and will hopefully make a run at the championship finally week.
Happy DeGrom Day. Happy
DeGrom Day as we're recording. Happy DeGrom Didn't Get Hurt Day.
Happy Weirdest Conference Finals in the NBA History week.
Not so happy for me.
Not so happy for you, but it's interesting at least that you have four teams who've literally like experienced no success in the last 40 years.
Being the like two teams who are like, you know, maybe seen as borderline playoff teams at all in the conference finals, like entering the year. I guess the Suns people were like kind of up on, but not like going to make the NBA finals up on. Like they were like, oh, the Suns might make some noise. The Hawks might be feisty. Not like what this is.
Yeah, it's definitely something. We don't really have to talk too much about it. Well, Dan's going to get his opportunity to express his sadness about the Nets later in this episode, and we'll be sure to grant him that platform. It's only fair.
Thank you.
I would have been granted. I would have been granted a platform for the Knicks win or lose. So.
Just what I wanted to discuss is another one of my team's losing. Thank you. I appreciate it so dearly.
Again,
the Mets are in first place, so we're in baseball season now, folks.
Have been in first place for quite some time.
For so long, knock on wood, like the Mets are rolling with like half their team injured, but it's okay. Well, we have a lot of summer to talk Mets.
Yeah, there'll be plenty of that, especially when we decide not to do the conference by conference preview. So everyone's going to be stuck with Mets talk at some point in mid-July.
Yeah, it's going to be a little bit of a different summer, but it'll be good, hopefully.
Yeah, if everyone's lucky, we'll get some guests. Anyway,
if everyone behaves
in your best behavior, maybe. So Boeheim's Army, we knew most of the team. We're not completely done roster wise just yet, but the bracket was released today, Monday, and Syracuse is in the Illinois region. So they'll be up against, among other teams, last year's champion, potentially eventually. But in the first round, Forces of Seoul is the opponent. They are a 14 seed. Their theme, I guess, is that they're all players who formerly played in the Korean League. Dan, any kind of opening thoughts? I know, like we kind of talked about the team a little bit. I know the roster is not super different, at least not yet, from previous years. Also, no kind of across the way in round two, we could be facing the Murray State alumni team, which. A feistier squad and not really who I would want to face in round two here.
I mean, if John Morant's not playing, I feel good about it, which I imagine he will not be. It's going to be interesting. I feel like there's been a little less hype for Boeheim's Army. I think like the constant just like flaming out just before people were hoping has worn on people a little bit. But obviously, if we get some good games out of the gates here, I think people get excited pretty quickly. I it'd be really awesome to run through this thing and win it with an all Syracuse alumni team, but I'm also just want to win it with like a mostly Syracuse alumni team. So I'm kind of excited about some of the additions that we've made so far. We don't know like the full extent of who's going to be on this team. But we've brought in some interesting talented guard, which I know was a bit of a question mark going in, especially with like the Syracuse guys that we have set to play. So, I'm starting to work myself into like the TBT excitement. It's probably a lot harder because the NBA has like sneakily worn on because they pushed the schedule back a little bit, probably not enough. But it's pretty exciting. So I'm getting up there. I hope it'll be nice to see Tyler Lydon and Malachi Richardson going. Hopefully Chris McCullough will actually see him this year after he had to bow out. Obviously it's always good to see CJ out there and Devo is obviously this is officially his last year in this, right? He said he's retiring from TBT after this.
Yeah, which makes sense. I mean, like he's been such a great like kind of spiritual leader for this group. At the same time, I do feel like, you know, it's not even his fault. It's just you can only put so much on him in particular to handle scoring, distribution. Like there's just a lot that's been put on him. So hopefully we have some more, guard additions here, whether they're Syracuse players or not. It would be nice to kind of build up that sort of part of the team a little bit. And we have here.
We have Tyrese Rice, former Boston College guard, Kiefer Sykes, who like diehard college basketball fans might recognize the name. He was at Wisconsin Green Bay and he was like one of the best small conference scoring guards in college basketball for a few years. So that's exciting. He's been playing pretty well overseas and it'll be interesting to see if they add other names. Obviously I think the Syracuse guys we kind of have here right now. But like also like it's not like a crazy thing. Like even the first year I think that the Hamstone was in this, Willie Dean from Purdue was on the team and like was one of the better players in the team. So it's not like this is a breaking new ground to add a couple outsiders in and you know we'll adopt them and inherit them, even the former Boston College player, as our own as we move forward here.
At least he wasn't on a team that really beat us all that often, so don't really have to worry about that as much.
I mean, you have to be a very old Boston College basketball alumnus for that to be the case.
Just as a note for Forces of Soul, I was looking up them a little bit. They do have a couple like players some might recognize. Vernon Macklin, formerly of Florida, is on that squad, as is Josh Newkirk, formerly of Indiana, among others on the roster. So
Vernon Macklin's 34. Like he was at Florida. Was he on those back-to-back title teams, or he was like around that era, if I remember correctly?
He was around that era. I don't know the exact years for him.
So he's getting up there. I think he's played in this event before. I think with other teams. I had to find out. I remember him playing TBT.
Oh,
but obviously, I think
so we have a reason to dislike Vernon Macklin.
Yeah,
Macklin played 2 years at Georgetown actually before he played 2 years.
Right,
in Florida.
You're right. Interesting. Yeah, so Vernon Macklin, he definitely played TBT before, but I'm now in the depths of like overseas basketball blogs, which is always a fun place to be. So
he's been everywhere. Yeah. He drafted by the Pistons, played for the Fort Wayne Mad Ants, and he was playing for the in Turkey, the Gaziantep basketball team for Royal Holly. He played for Rio Grande Valley Vipers. Then he was over at in the Philippine Basketball Association. Some might recognize some of the teams over there. Paul Harris used to play for. But yeah, he played for Barangay Jimbre Kings. He also played for the played in the Chinese Basketball League as well. In the Liaoning Flying Leopards. Great team name, by the way.
Excellent.
Yeah. Played for a bunch of other. He played in Qatar. He played in South Korea, which is where he kind of got his tie-in here. Played for the Goyang Orions, the Magnolia Hotshots. In Japan, played for the Kawasaki Brave Thunders. And then he played for, in South Korea, the Changwon LG Sakers. Which, so there's a lot going on here. The Sakers have a really cool, really angry bird logo.
You really live a life when you play overseas basketball. It's something.
I mean, this team name. I mean, the team name, whatever. But the logo.
I need to find the logo.
I'm dropping this in for you. I mean, this bird is angry. This bird.
Oh wow! It's like the Atlanta Hawks. I mean, this is like what this is the team that this is the logo that played the Sixers last night. Basically, this is. This is actually Kevin Herter.
Yeah, the Hawks suddenly became the Phoenix, and lit Philadelphia aflame, and that's how we end up here. This team is like is a create a team masterclass. Big fan.
I really like how evil this bird looks. Just the no pupil. There's a lot going on. But yeah, overseas mascots, really generally excellent, I think.
And there might be an entire episode later this summer because, as everyone here knows, our mascot escapades are how we ended up adopting Tulane. It's how we were in on Loyola, but everybody else was. And we had an entire mascot talk, if I recall, back in like 2014 for a good half an episode, back when we were much less focused.
Which is saying something for our level of focus now.
I mean, we've done a better job of being much more Syracuse focused of late.
That's true. That's fair. But it's still like we're talking about the LG Sakers right now. So
yeah, but there's like at least that was like tangentially related to what we're doing.
Yeah. And also, like, you know, it's the summer.
Yeah, exactly. And nobody's here for like game analysis right now.
Of what?
Anyway, there's plenty more to talk about with the team. We don't have the first game for another month. We'll have a bracket challenge on Noon's Magician. We have a lot more to share there later, actually. I can't share yet, but some cool stuff that we'll be doing around the bracket challenge and awarding somebody that doesn't work for Noon's Magician with some cool prizes down the road. But again, we have a month until that happens, so quite a bit going on until then. Did want to talk about here before we kind of got into beer and some of the other stuff. We mentioned it earlier, but big Supreme Court win for NCAA athletes. Big L for the NCAA. Supreme Court ruled unanimously, maybe surprising given the state of the country right now. The NCAA cannot limit education-related benefits, computers, paid internships in particular. The colleges can offer their sports stars, which is a victory for athletes that can help open the door for further easing in the decades-old fight over paying student-athletes. That being the first paragraph from the AP. Again, this is far from over, but definitely seems like we're headed in a direction where compensation in some shape or form for athletes is allowed. It's definitely going to make it easier for schools to be able to treat student-athletes much more like students. Well, other students and the benefits that they receive, the internships, laptops, stuff like that was always just completely asinine that players were, you know, not afforded those benefits. So I think we're headed in the right direction. There's, again, though, a lot more still to come on the name and likeness front and just exactly what NCAA schools will be able to do for athletes. But again, big win, I think, for student athletes. This is especially good, I think, in light of playoff expansion talks and things like that, that at least if we're going to see a 17 game season, which seems likely, we're not going to see that without, you know, additional compensation in some way, shape or form for athletes.
Yeah. It more than anything, I think it's just like the fact that it was 9-0 just kind of indicates like where things are going. The NCAA just very badly needs to change things. Obviously with the name, image, likeness, I think that's in the pipeline. It's going to happen. They're dragging their feet as much as they can with it, but this was a pretty clear indication they can't really rely on the courts to go their way. Like when you have a pretty, you know, one-sided Supreme Court that is completely unified in this one thing, like that the writing's on the wall for all future NCAA issues relating to player compensation. So yeah, I think you're going to see this is just one of a number of major issues that are going to kind of change the way that college sports look. But I think we're all pretty aware of how that's been going, and most of the country has come around on it in a major way. Obviously there's disagreements over like the process and disagreements over like the amount of compensation that's appropriate, whatever else, but like at a baseline level, I think it's pretty overwhelming that people are like, yeah, they should be getting something, and they certainly should be getting like, you know, the type of compensation that were covered in this bill, in this case. So yeah, it's exciting. It's and it was a fun thing to wake up to because, like, yeah, you don't expect, even with all that being true, you don't expect that kind of a one-sided decision.
No, and I mean, I can't believe that I'll be quoting Brett Kavanaugh on this podcast, but here we go.
Brett Kavanaugh and Neil Dorsuch, you know, those heroes of ours.
Brett was the closer here, really, with just the nail in the coffin. Nowhere else in America can businesses get away with agreeing not to pay their workers a fair market rate on the theory that their product is defined by not paying their workers a fair market rate. The NCAA is not above the law.
Nods in agreement with Brett Kavanaugh. Brett Kavanaugh is definitely going to become like a dirty Georgetown booster. I can't wait.
Oh, yeah, that's happening. But yeah, that's pretty big. I again, very much looking forward to what's next there.
Yeah, it'll be, we'll see. I think this is all going to, I think it's going to be kind of an avalanche. And it's already started. Like, we kind of know where things are going. NIL is obviously on the precipice. It's just a matter of, like, it getting officially adopted as a national thing. Because state by state, it's been going. But we're very clearly, we're pretty clearly getting there.
Indeed. I did want to say before, I know it's like tangentially Syracuse related, but before we get to halftime with beer and everything, did want to say really cool and really awesome for Carl Nassib. Brother of Ryan Nassib, former Syracuse quarterback. Carl played at Penn State, was drafted by the Browns, and he's on the Raiders currently. Came out today. Really, really cool for him. He also pledged to donate $100,000 to the Trevor Project. So really cool for him that he's able to live his truth and, you know, just really be his authentic self and who he wants to be. And that's just awesome for him. So just wanted to note that. Again, tangentially Syracuse related. But still, probably something that at least some Syracuse fans will care about. Nonetheless, Carl was a recruiting target of ours at one point, but obviously decided to go to a rival school. Won't hold that against him, especially here. So again, just really cool for Carl today.
Yeah, it's excellent news. It's the first, someone can correct me if I'm wrong, it's the first out athlete in a major four sport since Jason Collins, who was the first, first in the NFL.
And he's first like, active player, because obviously, like Michael Sam,
Jason Collins played.
Active NFL player.
Yeah, first Michael Sam didn't make it an active roster. But yeah, and it's also like it shouldn't matter, but like Carl Nassib's like a pretty solid, like, you know, rotation player for the Raiders. Like had six and a half sacks a couple years ago, and that really it shouldn't matter. But the fact that it's like a pretty prominent player does have, I think, a positive effect. It's not a guy who's like going to be on and off like rosters. Like he's going to play. So, it's a really big step. It sounded like reading his letter that like, it sounds like his teammates knew, like he told them ahead of time, and it's great that it sounds like he met pretty full acceptance, which is great. And I talking about like with the NCAA things, everything have changed so fast, like, you know, same here. Obviously there are people who are going to be awful about this, but they're in the vast, vast minority. And it's just a big step. It's been something that we've been kind of like waiting for years now. And it's both like surprising it took this long, but now I kind of expect it to be more of the norm. So, bid for Carl. It was a super brave move for him to really be the first. And, it's cool that he has a Syracuse connection. I know Ryan, posted on Instagram how proud he was. So yeah, happy to, you know, be supportive of that. And, yeah, just a really, really nice way to end, this Pride Month. And, hopefully we see more people who are, you know, who are both like able now more free to follow in Carl's footsteps. And we just get to be a more equitable society, as always.
Agreed. Dan, why don't we talk a little bit about, I guess, our weekends, or in your case, extending into Monday, what we were drinking.
I didn't have too much like interesting stuff. It was mostly kind of run of the mill, Yinglings and I said something fall off my wall. Sam Adams, I think that's Sierra Nevada, which is nice, but not a super crafty weekend for me. I will be going back down to the Jersey Shore this weekend, so I will make a point of loading up on some cartons and some Last Waves and some of the other good Jersey stuff, but just didn't really have the opportunity this weekend. I did over the store, so I was kind of using what I had still available, which was unfortunately not too much exciting stuff. That'll be rectified soon.
Nicely done. All right. On my end, I went down to had a couple different things. I know I've mentioned Celador before. They're in LA. They had their Tepesh seltzer. It was basically a like pineapple saison, but it drank like a seltzer. Extremely good. Really, really enjoyable beverage. It's not like around anymore, but if they happen to have it again and somebody's in the LA area, I would highly recommend getting some. It was absolutely delicious, refreshing, and actually pretty high ABV for a seltzer, 7%. So definitely an enjoyable one. Had some Green Futures from Modern Times, Went down to Ambitious Ales down Long Beach for the first time. A really cool spot. I appreciated the fact that they quoted Mr. Deeds on the wall, which was a fun nod to, you know, I think many listeners' childhood. For others, maybe it was after your time. But had some good beers from them. Nice Guy Eddie, West Coast IPA from them. Hike School, lager. Also had Central Perk. While I'm not a big fan of the Friends reference, I really enjoyed the beer. It was a coffee blonde and a really, really good one at that. Yeah, coffee was very much there, but didn't like overpower the beer so much that you didn't couldn't tell it was a blonde. So really good beer there. Had from Modern Times, Order of Hermes. Also had from Surfridge Brewing. First time I went there, the spot in El Segundo. Had That's What Citrus Said. And Montangelo's. Montangelo's is actually an amber IPA, which is interesting. Had some buy, sell, trade, hazy IPA from Monkish. Didn't get to go down there, but they reopened their tasting room. So a buddy of mine grabbed a 4-pack down there. And then had another can of Griffith J. Griffith, beer I've talked about before. Arguably the best beer in LA. Is a Imperial Coffee Stout from Highland Park. That is excellent.
Awesome. Yeah, the coffee blonde, super intriguing. I kind of struggle with coffee beers sometimes, but that sounds like it'd be an interesting blend.
Yeah, super refreshing. Yeah, the coffee like kind of shone through. I haven't drank coffee itself in going on 5.5 years now, but I still enjoy. Yeah, I still enjoy coffee beers. I drink tea now. I felt like it was just having an adverse effect. I was crashing more than I thought I was, so I stopped drinking coffee, but still do black tea quite a bit. So I didn't remove myself from caffeine.
It might, yeah. Well, I guess like it probably would be a good thing, but I'm helplessly dependent on it.
I actually quit cold turkey back in 20. Actually, quit cold turkey at the national championship game in Glendale. Was it the second Clemson Alabama game? I think it might have been the second Clemson Alabama.
2016. 2016, 2015 was the first.
Yeah, 2016. So I quit cold turkey there, and then I like didn't have caffeine for like 2 months, and then eased my way back in with green tea, and then once I had kids, then I started going back to black tea, and then I only drink black tea now.
Nice. Yeah, I get like really awful caffeine headaches by like 2 or 3 o'clock. So I don't know. I also enjoy coffee though. So I'll drink tea once in a while.
I loved coffee when I was drinking it. It's just, then I just stopped and I was like, oh, that was doing some terrible things to me.
Yeah. You're a braver person than I. Maybe one day. But I do enjoy the process of having coffee. So, and I don't feel terrible about it. So hopefully, you know, hopefully it doesn't take a bad turn. But I do get like the wicked, like, you know, mid afternoon headache. Although it's rare for me to know it's by noon without having it. So it just hasn't usually been an issue.
Reasonable. All right. So I know we don't have like a ton of other Syracuse things to talk about here, but I guess for me, one, and maybe this is rectified this week. There were a ton of visits over the weekend for football. I know basketball's had a lot of visits as well, but Danny, a little concerned that we're not adding more guys at this point. You think it's just a product of things are just opening up. We're only seeing, you know, campus visits now. I think there's reason to be skeptical if you're on the outside of Syracuse football in particular. I guess what side of the fence do you fall on? Obviously other schools don't have as much of a problem, you know, securing a lot of guys early. I know we started strong. We had 4 guys in the first like couple months of this cycle, but since then, you know, we haven't heard a peep about commitments at least.
Yeah. I'll start getting more concerned if we go like a couple more weeks without them, because now we're just starting to have guys back on campus. And I think it's very reasonable for this current class to like hold off until they're actually able to do these campus visits, because they had like a whole year where they would be able to at least have like those initial visits, those junior days, those other times where you kind of really like set your lists and feel out who you want to don't move forward with. And they weren't really presented that opportunity in person. So I don't feel like, I'm not thrilled that we haven't had a commit since March, but I'm willing to give it a couple of weeks now that we're starting to get guys up to campus and meeting the coaches in person and some of that stuff that we weren't able to do last year before I forget too much. You know, we're kind of where we've been, so, which isn't great, but it's not like we're like so far behind where our normal stuff has been, which indicates that like this is kind of an issue for everybody, or everyone in our kind of general group. Obviously, like the Alabamas of the world are getting guys, but I think like if we were uniquely far behind, I think our national rank wouldn't be 59. I think it would be like in the 70s or 80s. So I'm not gonna worry about it too much yet, but it's like it's something that's hovering there. So yeah, give it a couple of weeks. If we're still like not getting anyone, then I'll start to kind of wonder what's up.
Yeah, I mean, realistically, having this many like official visits, I think there was at least like 10 guys that showed up in the last like week. Getting this many guys, you would think it usually has like a couple commitments following it.
I feel pretty good that we'll get one this week. Like the fact that we have that many guys on campus, someone yeah. generally pulls the plug or pulls the trigger, pulls the lever, pulls something.
Trigger, lever, any of those.
It is election day tomorrow in New York, so lever, I guess, even though that's not how we vote anymore. But yeah, like I think hopefully we'll get someone this week just because you don't tend to strike out, but like you don't tend to do a full like giant recruiting weekend without like landing somebody.
Yeah. And I mean, I think too, a lot of these guys, there's other visits that they have. You know, you hope that you can convince them not to take those other visits. I think in general, like SU definitely has some work to do on the trail in terms of convincing people that we're back on the upswing and not headed elsewhere. Obviously, but I think from their standpoint, just getting a couple names and I think anyone right now would do the trick, but it would be great to see some of these guys who are like, you know, high 3-4-star guys pledged to SU. I know we lost one target over the weekend to BC, actually. It was Edwin Kalenge, yep. who was, I believe, defensive end, if I recall. Might have been a linebacker. Apologies for not.
He is inside linebacker. Was this from Windsor School. Up in so, Loomis Chafee School in Windsor, Connecticut.
Yeah, so realistically, I mean, it's not like BC had like an inside track on it by any means, but that's the type of player where if Syracuse is battling BC head-to-head, you'd hope Syracuse can get the win. But yeah, linebacker, 6'3", 225, ranked top 550 or so players by the 24/7 composite. So not great to lose a guy like that, and he's definitely a high 3 talent, but we'll see. Hopefully SU can rally a little bit again the next week or so. It'd be nice to land a couple of these guys. Obviously it's a little bit different this year, but still would be good to get some momentum and start finding ways to lock down some of these higher ranked guys too. Cause really, I mean, I know that it's going to be tough to get, you know, more than like 1 4-star or so after the season we just had, but you know, it just takes one guy having the faith and then usually, you know, some more will follow. I know for me in particular, it'd be great to be able to land a QB in this class. I know Henry Bielan would be the guy that we're mostly looking at. If we strike out on him, and I think we're actually trending pretty well with him, I don't really know what this team's going to do. Once again, could be a reset situation in terms of targets.
At the very least, we've gotten our quarterback room into a much better place than it was yes. like a year ago with Lamson, with Schrader. I mean, even DeVito could take an extra year if he wants. I don't know that he will, but that's to be seen. But all of that like is a big upside compared to like where we were before we had Lamson especially. So yeah, hopefully we continue to get targets, but like it won't be as bad if we miss out on quarterbacks this class than it would have been last class or the class before. So it's less of a pressure packed thing, but obviously like ideally you want to take a quarterback every year.
Yeah. And there's definitely I think did Clemson miss on a quarterback last year? They had a bit of a situation where like they don't really have much going on depth wise right now.
Yeah, no, this is the like for Clemson, like their active roster it's basically Uyandale. I have to like relearn how to pronounce that before I dive back into college football. But did they get a guy last year? I don't remember. I'm looking now. They have Cade Klubnik in the 2022 class, who's a 4-star. He's not like a top level, but he's one of those Austin area quarterbacks where they, you know, there's a million of them every couple of years they have a 4-star. Yeah, they did not. It does not look like they only did a quarterback. Oh no, they did. Bubba Chandler out of Georgia, but he's like a 3-star. He's more of a developmental prospect for them, which means he may be amazing. But yeah, last year they did not get like the big blue chip quarterback that they land almost every year. the year before. They brought in DJ. They brought in Tayshaun. I can't pronounce his last name. I try so hard. A couple years before that, from Connecticut. Yeah, so I mean, I'm not worried about Clemson. Also, if they want to just chill for a bit, just like take a couple years off, that'd be okay. Yeah. But yeah, they did not land a big quarterback last year. They landed 1 3-star guy. But I also think DJ's gonna be really good. So I'm not too super worried for Dabo and company.
No, I would not shed a tear. I know for them, they're probably still a top 4 or 5 team. I mean, realistically, you look at the ACC schedule, it's not as if they're really going to be tested much. And this is really kind of the issue for the league in the near future, like when we see a 12-team playoff. And we talked about that a little bit last time around. When you see a 12-team playoff, like if the ACC is consistently not getting more than one team in that conversation, or if the ACC starts to see themselves like a Clemson, you know, trips and falls a little bit, if they have a coaching change, if Venables finally leaves, or if Saban retires and Dabo finally heads over to Alabama or whatever, there's definitely a chance that the ACC starts kind of trending down in that list, because realistically only the top 6 conferences are guaranteed bids to this thing. So if the ACC, I mean, it's unlikely, sure, but if the ACC starts trending downward, or if Boise has a big season and Cincinnati has a big season, I mean, you could see without Florida State coming back, or North Carolina really establishing their footing, or other programs getting their shit together, you know, this could be the sort of thing where, you know, the ACC is in a bit of a perilous situation. And that's the absolute worst case, but just something to look at over the next 4 or 5 years if we don't like fix the like muddled middle situation in the ACC.
Yeah, you certainly don't want to be in the situation where you're only getting one team every year. And like, I'm not super worried about getting one team in. Like, obviously, the Pac-12 basically said their piece. We're like, can we just have all the autonomy 5 have auto bids? And it's hilarious they're doing that after the 1 year where they would have missed it. But there was a year, I actually looked up this for an article, like in 2016 for the Pac-12, they would have had Washington with the auto bid. And then they also would have gotten USC and Colorado in, assuming all the voting was the same. So like, they would have been okay. They would have gotten in multiple teams more often than not. I haven't looked at the ACC. I'm looking now. In 2014, Georgia Tech would have just missed by one spot because Boise would have stolen the last bid. I'm going through now. In 2015, Clemson got in. Florida State would have gotten in. North Carolina would have also gotten in. And then 2016. So like, you just need guys in. You need schools in that like 8 to 12 range. And usually, I feel like the ACC is at least in decent shape. In 2016, Clemson got in. Florida State would finish 11. I don't know if they would have gotten bumped.
Yeah, 2018 is really when things started going south.
So Florida State would have gotten. Yeah, 2016, Florida State would have gotten in because Western Michigan would have bumped Oklahoma State. Yeah, I'm looking now. I'm interested now to go through. 2017, Clemson was the 1 seed. Miami was the 10, so they probably would have gotten in because UCF didn't even really steal anything. They were 12, so they would have. And they honestly would probably in this situation, UCF probably would have been ranked higher because they wouldn't have really been able to leave them out. 2018, we got Clemson in at 2.
That's it.
2018 next. Would have been it. Yeah, we were down there, though. We were at 20.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, there was no other ACC team that would have been – like we were it. We were the next best ACC team.
2019 was Clemson. 2019 would have also been out. Yeah, so it's been a problem the last couple of years for sure. And then 2020 – SUNC would have probably snuck in, right? No, they were 13. Wow. Yeah, so the last 2 years we would have – well, I guess Notre Dame technically was an ACC team this year. But, yeah, so we talked about last week, like, Notre Dame potentially, like, seeing what they – how they respond to this will be big. But it's also just, like, we need to get North Carolina into, like, a more consistent place. Obviously, Miami should be, like, in the discussion more often than not. But I'm not, like, super worried about it unless it becomes a trend. But also the fact that there are more spots may kind of – And the fact that there's potentially more money for the league could end up having a positive impact. So we'll see. I'm not going to worry about it too much until like it happens a couple years in a row where it's just Clemson. But also, like, we just need like Miami to be better and Florida State to be better. Like, those are the schools that we're relying on to be like in contention for these second and third bids. And like at a certain point, like, it's on those schools to also get it together.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think that we all thought, given the hiring spree that happened in the ACC around like 2015 or so, between 2015 and 2016, like, everyone was like, oh wow, the ACC hit, you know, nailed it on all these hires, everything went well. And like, Yeah, it did. But at the same time, like you look at, I mean, for us, obviously things haven't gone necessarily as planned, haven't gone necessarily as planned Virginia Tech. You know, Bronco Mendenhall has gotten, you know, Virginia to an Orange Bowl, which is great, but also like hasn't necessarily been consistent. Dave Clawson's been great at Wake, but also hasn't really gotten past a certain point. Like there's a lot of teams that have had a lot that have a lot of like guys who've been there a while, but there's definitely a bit of a stagnation. Not like a, I wouldn't say a stagnation in the sense that they're like doing poorly, but a stagnation in the sense that they're definitely not like no one's elevating above a certain level. Florida State's hiring issues are obviously a problem. You know, we don't really know like what North Carolina can turn into, but it seems like they're going to turn into something pretty impressive over time. So I think that, you know, the league definitely got besieged by a bit of like top to bottom Clemson aside, like mediocrity, unfortunately. And hopefully that clears itself up.
And I mean, hopefully, I mean, I think a lot of these things are cyclical, especially in college football. Obviously we've been mired in our own mediocrity, but like overall, like big programs tend to go in cycles. So I don't think Florida State will be down forever. I don't think Miami will be down forever. Maybe they won't be what they were, but I think they'll probably have some peaks, even more consistent peaks than they've had recently. North Carolina seems to be entering one. Georgia Tech will probably have one soonish after they had, like, at the start of the college football playoff. Like, they would have been very close to making that first one if there was a 12-team situation. So it's just a matter of, like, having those peaks hit at the right time. And hopefully, because we've been in a real, like, a 3 or 4 year – well, 2017 was pretty good. But, like, we've been in a pretty, you know, iffy situation since. Like, we can start to hit these peaks as this 12-team playoff rolls around in 2023 is what it looks like. And then we're in a pretty good situation. So if we can make two or three teams in there – and it's like different teams and there's opportunities for like a Colorado level team, like in the Pac-12 to rise up and have a surprise top 10 finish and get into the playoff. Like then you're really opening the doors for those middling programs to be able to sell something. Like 2018, if we were able to like capitalize on the hype after that, and then there was a 12 team playoff, then you're like, yeah, you can make the playoff at Syracuse. It's not out of the realm at all. So yeah, that's, it's on the teams to, be more competitive and figure out what they need to do. And also, like, you know, hopefully the league is forward thinking and can reel in Notre Dame. that's like the big whale out there. I know we all love to hate on Notre Dame, but it's undeniable. They would be really, really good to bring into the league full time. So, you know, hopefully the fact that they help make a system that's way worse for them will help in that effort. But we talked at length about that last week. So, that's way very much yet to be seen.
Indeed. All right, Dan, got a little bit more time left, so I will cede the floor to your Nets fandom if you so choose. Feel free to say whatever you might have on your mind about the loss in Game 7, the unfulfilled potential, the fact that Kevin Durant was still a god among us, but unfortunately, it just did not work out this year.
Yeah, it's both. It was very disappointing on Saturday night. It's hard not to call it like a missed opportunity of a year just because of all the talent and just because how like the just everything's opened up for like a team to take this thing. And now it, you know, it's anyone's guess who it will be. If the Nets had made it through, I think they would have been like a pretty strong prohibitive favorite. Kyrie Irving got hurt and like with a pretty bad ankle injury. Harden was hurt, came back probably he had a grade 2 hamstring strain. That's like not a thing KP players come back from in a week, and he did, and he was clearly not himself. If he was at 50%, I'd be surprised. Like, he was not the same player. So it was the Kevin Durant show against probably the healthiest team in the playoffs in the Bucks. Not always a team that you can rely on, but at the end of the day, they had their three stars who were all pretty healthy. We had one and like a third star at the end. Durant was clearly the best player in the series, and almost, I mean, he was a couple inches from winning the series for us basically. But and it's disappointing that we didn't take advantage of the opportunities in Game 3, that ugly 86-83 game. Harden probably would have gotten more healthy, and I would feel very confident against the Hawks. But it's just disappointing. But I also think a lot of this goes back to just the way the NBA set up this season. Like, it becomes very hard to think that the fact they squeezed in a 72-game season in a year that was only 4 weeks shorter, or that was 4 weeks shorter than a normal season, like didn't contribute to all of these injuries, and almost every team left in the playoffs or in the playoffs, like nine all-stars missed time in the playoffs this year, plus a handful of other players. Throw in like, and for the Nets, like Spencer Dinwiddie was out all year. And obviously that probably didn't have to do with the grind because it was so early in the year, but it's just hard to imagine like a more normal calendar would have resulted in fewer crazy injuries at the end of the season. So I don't feel good about it, but the team will be back next year. Hopefully they will mix up the, you know, add a bit to their the supporting cast, fill in some of the blanks, keep on having guys like Claxton come along who can help in a, you know, defend big guys and fill some of those holes, and they should be right back in the mix next year. I think they'll be one of the heavy favorites to win the title next year. So I feel bad about it, but in the context of how everything went down, like, it's more understandable than if like a team with a healthy Kyrie, KD, and Harden went down to those Bucks. If we even had two of those guys at 100% in that last series, I think it would have been over in five. So it is what it is. Don't feel great, but you know, it happens. Hopefully they rest up. I know Durant and Harden are playing in the Olympics, which is something. I kind of wish they weren't. I respect it. I respect their competitiveness. I respect them probably wanting to like re-gel and get that chemistry back from when they were in OKC. Hopefully the Olympics is not too strenuous and they can run through it and don't have to play that many minutes. I kind of wish they were staying home and just like sitting in a nice tub for 3 months.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely get that perspective.
I totally respect it. I don't want to be like angry about it. But
that's a lot for any player.
Right, because they just had a long season. Durant's coming off of like a catastrophic injury. It's amazing. He missed a lot of time this year, but it's amazing. He looked the best player in the world this last series. So, knock on wood, fingers crossed. Nothing bad happens. At the same time, it's hard to deny someone the chance to go win Olympic gold. That's special. So, you know, hopefully it's not a catastrophic decision, but we'll see what happens. And at least, I mean, it gives me more of a rooting interest in the Olympics. So not that I wasn't going to root for the NBA players, but now I get to support my guys. Also, I realized over the weekend, I root for Kevin Durant, Jacob DeGrom, and for the moment, Aaron Rodgers. And that's pretty amazing. it's not a bad trio.
If you guys would like Daniel Jones, I would very much like to trade my situation for yours.
I'm all right. Are you offering like Daniel Jones and Julius Randle for KD and Aaron Rodgers?
No, I'm more just saying that realistically, I think the Giants should offer up Daniel Jones next year's first and numerous other items to fix what remains a really stupid decision.
We'll see what happens if Rodgers actually holds out this year. It'll be very fascinating, but that's a future everyone issue, I guess, because he's not getting traded this year for numerous reasons. So if he does get traded, hopefully it is for a massive, massive haul, and we'll, I guess, find out about Jordan Love in the meantime. But I'll talk more at length about that in other podcasts when we have time to fill.
What happens to Packers fans if they just end up like hating but loving two of the three most iconic quarterbacks in franchise history?
So it's complicated. Like Favre, the problem with Favre is now he's dipping his toe into political waters, and it's like that's more of a fragment thing. People had like just gotten over Favre, and I think Favre had kind of come back to the family, and everyone was okay with him again. And now he's hosting a podcast with Eric Bolling. So like, if he had avoided that, I think we'd be. But I think on a football level, I think most people are okay with Favre now. I think Packers fans are way more on Rodgers' side than they were on Favre's side, because Rodgers didn't ask for them to draft his replacement and then also not tell him and treat him kind of poorly. Favre was playing like games every offseason. So it's a much different feel from the Packer fan base, as best I can tell, not being in Green Bay, obviously.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I was kind of curious. I know a couple Packers fans, none of them live in Wisconsin. So I know that, you know, not that you're less of a fan. It's more like you're obviously just not on the ground getting like the daily inundation of this at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's certainly a sect of Packers fans who are kind of tired, like over it. But those are the people that are just going to be for the team no matter what happens. And I'm a Packer fan. I'm not going to stop being a Packer fan if Rodgers leaves. But I think he is in the right in this situation based on what's going on, and also based on like how every other team over the last couple of years has treated like their older quarterback when they've drafted a younger quarterback. None of them have done the same things the Packers did, which was just keep him completely in the dark. And I honestly think if he was just aware ahead of time they might take Jordan Love, I don't think this would be a big deal. And that was just like the centerpiece of a long string of what he probably feels like were minor disrespectful discretions that he just all added up for him. So I still think it's kind of 50-50 whether or not he plays for us this year, but, you know, we'll see. I've kind of come to peace with the situation for the moment. It'll be hard if it actually comes to roost, but that's a, you know, we're not going to know until the season starts.
Reasonable. All right. On that note, I think it's been fun, Dan, as always, and we'll chat next week.
Yes. Have a great weekend, everyone. Enjoy the outdoors and stay safe as always.
Indeed. That was Dan. I'm John. Thank you, everybody, for listening to Troy News and Absolute Podcast. You can rate, review, subscribe on iTunes, Megaphone, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, Overcast, wherever you listen to podcasts, and go Orange.
Orange.